Calling.
Good day. I'm Brian Bonner, host of Ukraine Calling, and I want to introduce you to today's guests. I will be interviewing Kurt Volker, the former special representative to Ukraine from the United States and a co-founder of American University. And I will also, in studio, be interviewing Ludmila Dokhalnovskaya, who is the chief of staff for the American University.
Russia claims the territory of other countries. You can train your pilots on F-16s, but we won't give you any. I think a lot of Ukrainians feel that the conscription system that previously existed, mobilization system that previously existed, was operating unfairly.
Why do we need an American University kid? What does it offer to?
If you go study in the United States and you pay $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, and we are able to bring this to students in Ukraine at about $8,000 a year. When you have 80% of the Republicans and 80% at least of the Democrats in the House and the Senate all wanting to get something done, it'll get done. The question is how and when, which is tough. And the delays that we've seen are regrettable, but they're not because of Ukraine. The delays are because of the southern border, which is the hottest political issue in the United States right now, and one where the two parties fundamentally disagree. So, or at least disagree over methods of what to do about the southern border.
Do you agree that it's just enough to keep them in the fight? What will it take to win this war? It's going to take more than this.
I'll tell you, this is the biggest frustration that I have. It will take the Biden administration deciding that they want Ukraine to win the war. Everything you hear is, we will stand with Ukraine as long as it takes. We'll provide assistance. We'll provide economic support. But you never hear the clear goal, we want Ukraine to defeat Russian forces in Ukraine, period. Because if you had that clear goal, you wouldn't put limits on the equipment. You wouldn't say, oh, well, you can have the HIMARS, but you can't have the ATACMS. Say, well, you can train your pilots on F-16s, but we won't give you any. You can get them from Denmark. We wouldn't say, well, we have all these A-10s sitting in the desert in Arizona, but you can't have those because, well, they're complicated. That would not be the attitude. The attitude would be, tell the military, U.S. military, figure out what Ukraine needs to win the war, and then we'll give it to them.
Full throttle.
Just do it. That's what we should be doing. Russia claims the territory of other countries. They view things that were ever once part of the Russian Empire, Russian lands. They don't view other peoples, Ukrainians, Belarusians, Georgians, whomever, as equal and legitimate. If you look at the methods that Russia is using in Ukraine, abduction of children, torture of people to intimidate, bombing of cities deliberately, trying to knock out civilian infrastructure. This is a kind of brutality that is horrific, combined with a vision that it's truly Hitlerian vision of the, all of these things should be ours. That is dangerous not only to Ukraine, that's dangerous to Europe and dangerous to the United States because of our NATO treaty commitments. So we had better take this seriously.
Would you, under any circumstances, serve in a second Trump administration?
I'll give you the same answer that Mike Pompeo routinely gives, is that if you are given the opportunity to serve and you can make a difference, then you can't rule it out.
Manpower shortage, conscription. If I remember Vietnam right, we took 18-year-olds, right? This country's fighting for its survival. Does it really make sense to have the most able-bodied people from 18 to 27 sitting on the sidelines? Wouldn't it be a better look if you conscripted 18-year-olds?
Yeah, I can't answer that. That's a question for Ukrainian society. You are right. That's what we did in our conscription. It was historically, that was the age, was 18. It is different in Ukraine. I'm not able to cut. This is a choice for society, what they think. There is legislation in the Rada right now that they are looking at to change the mobilization process. I think the most important thing that can and probably will come out of new legislation is a sense of fairness. I think a lot of Ukrainians feel that the conscription system that previously existed, mobilization system that previously existed, was operating unfairly. And so I think the Rada needs to create a system that people can trust and believe that it is fair.
I'm happy to be in this studio with Ludmila Dolhanovskaya. She has a great bio. She is the chief of staff of American University in Kyiv. She is a strategic communications specialist, and she was the former advisor to strategic communications for the former commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, General Valery Zaluzhny. 2021, before the start of the war until 2023. Happy to have you here. Thanks for coming in, Ludmila.
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor for me.
You saw the interview with Kurt Volker on the war, and that was done on February 23rd, which was the day of your first graduation ceremony. At that time, he was confident that the U.S. was going to approve the $60 billion in aid to Ukraine to keep fighting the war. And now we are a month later. Back then, Ukraine was stressed out. How stressed out are Ukrainians now, including yourself, about this continued blocking of assistance?
I have to admit that we definitely are stressed out. So that's really upset. And we need this support for sure. Our guys on the ground need it. We need weapon. We need ammunition every day. For us, every day is just, you know, huge expectations and big hopes for American politicians. And the latest news about this $300 million support which U.S. Congress is going to give us, it's something which gives us a hope. But definitely with how Russia is moving forward in its wartime economy and with their support from China and North Korea, Iran, it's horrible that we don't have this support from the West now in that amount which will allow us to save the lives of our civilians and military and stop Russian invasion.
Yes, unfortunately, the $300 million is not going to go very far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, you've probably read the news. Supposedly, former President Donald Trump has told Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, his friend, that if he becomes president again, that he will not give any money. Trump will not give any money to Ukraine. Did you hear that?
I did, but I am a specialist in strategic communications. So as soon as news appears, somebody wants them to be like in the air. So that was spread deliberately with some intention, and we can anticipate what the goal, like to make us nervous, to make Europe be divided, to spread all that, like, you know, concerns and doubts among their decision makers. First of all, I do really hope that their election campaign will be different from true presidency if it happens. This is a huge responsibility, and it will be quite responsible not only for Ukrainian people to leave us without support, to betray us. It will be a huge mistake on the American people, because their U.S. president can't give the chance for Russia, China, and other authoritarian regimes to prevail.
You've been on the inside of the military. How close do you think Ukraine is to becoming self-sufficient in terms of weapons production and not having to rely so much on foreign aid?
Again, I have to admit that we are not close, unfortunately, because this is a huge pressure on our economy. And the Ukraine economy, even before the full-scale invasion, wasn't so strong. We were quite dependent from Western support. And of course, with the full-scale war, we are even more weaker, unfortunately, more weak. And we need this financial support just to exist, to support the financial level and somehow to not give people like to leave the country and just have some level of economy. And the military production is quite expensive, even in a peaceful time. Unfortunately, we don't have that resources. We have people who know what to do. We have, unfortunately, the testing ground to test their whole weapon, ammunition, vehicles, etc. But we don't have capacities because of financial situation. That is the number one reason. Number two reason is the security situation. But as soon as any, like, you know, military production appears, it's a target number one for Russians. But we have quite great scientists and guys who can do that, like, because of their, like, you know, dedication and the desire to support. And as American University, we are partnered with Business Accelerator for Military Tech Industry. We are given them the educational part. They call MITS, which like power in Ukrainian. So we definitely see like there are like hundreds of small producers who are like who are making drones, other equipment, weapons, etc. So we have huge potential, smart and dedicated people. But of course, we need support and need security on our territory.
As a Ukrainian, I'm going to ask you, because you saw Kurt Volker dodge the question, it's a hot issue now. Not only are we short of weapons, we're short of manpower.
Absolutely.
Soldiers at the front line. The big debate is, and especially coming to a head in Parliament, although Parliament looks like it doesn't want to make a decision, in many countries at war, they start drafting, scripting men at age 18. We don't force men into the military until age 7. As a Ukrainian, what do you think is the right age?
It's quite a complicated issue. We should find some kind of balance. So first of all, even though they can't be conscripted obligatory under the age of 27, they can join the armed forces as volunteers since 18. So they have this right. If they have enough motivation and desire to serve, they can do that. They have the right for that. But the state doesn't have the right to mobilize and to draft them. Why I'm talking about balance? Ukraine is a country who was in its recent history suffering a lot under being in Soviet Union, then under Russian Empire, participating in two world wars, and being occupied by Nazi and then deoccupied by Red Army. We suffered, we lost a lot of male population during the 20th century. And that's a big trauma for the future generations. And why I'm talking about balance, because we need to save people somehow, these young people, give them chance to gain education, to create some future. But of course, somebody has to defend the country. So that's a big question. The first, we need to create conditions which will allow them to serve like as a human beings with a normal treatment, with everything equipped, trained, prepared for their service. The other issue is, of course, to give them motivation and to explain them why they have to sacrifice their health, life, their youth to defend their country. So it's very hard. I personally hope that the parliament will adopt this new law, which will be fair towards people, which will allow those who are in the trenches for 2 years have their
rotation
now, and younger people, at least from 25, can join the armed forces.
The 20 bar.
I will support, and I will just be a huge supporter for creating the conditions for young people to join. They have to understand that this is also the career path for them, that they can make like the career in the armed forces. They will gain there the skills and some traits of character which will allow them being more successful in their life. But of course, the first and number one task is to defend the country.
You had one of the most fascinating jobs, you know, in strategic communications to General Zelensky, who is the most trusted and popular public figure in Ukraine. Do you take credit for that?
I'm proud of that. So I was doing my job like with 100% dedication, and I can't be more proud that we see the results. So, and it was not only my job there. It was, first of all, his character, his leadership, I mean, by General Zelensky leadership, and of course, the Ukrainian armed forces who stopped Russian invasion, and they proved to the whole world that we are capable, and then we can prevail over the second so-called army in the world.
I'm a little surprised, I don't know if you were, about a lot of things. I mean, about his leaving the military to become, apparently, the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Kingdom. Do you think he'll make a good diplomat? And do you think that he has a political future, perhaps as the next president of Ukraine?
He has to decide that, and the Ukrainian people have to decide whether he has political future or not. But regarding his success in the diplomatic role, I'm pretty sure he will do this job with the excellence, because he was excellent in everything. I've learned about his education. So he has 3 military diplomas and the diploma in international relations from Ostrovska Academy. All of them were completed with excellence. So he is quite a diligent and a smart person for sure. So I think there is no job he can't do. So he will be successful. But of course, as many Ukrainians, I want his experience being here with our military, with the military for sure.
Well, if he does go into politics, you'd make a great campaign manager, given that vote of confidence. Why do we need an American university? What does it offer to
Ukrainians? Have always, from before the full-scale invasion and through it, had a demand for Western-style education. They know the old Soviet system. They know how it evolved in Ukraine after 30 years of independence, but it is still a state, public, different type of institution. A hunger for Western-style education. So we had 60,000 Ukrainian students per year studying abroad before 2022. It's probably more than that now, but that's what you had before then. So what we wanted to do was say, no, let's bring Western-style education and approach and mentality to Ukraine and offer it at a far more affordable price. If you go study in the United States and you pay out-of-state tuition fees, you could be paying $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And we are able to bring this to students in Ukraine at about $8,000 a year. And because of the war, we've offered some rebates on that. So that's one thing, is to bring it here and make it more accessible for more Ukrainians. The other thing is that I think, as Ukrainians themselves know, there needs to be a shedding as a society of an old mentality and the adoption of a new modern Western mentality for Ukraine. People have told me anecdotes, for example, about corruption in education in Ukraine, where you could pay your teacher for your grade. You have to introduce integrity in education and introduce the mindset that paying for your grade is actually a failure for your country, because they need you to know what you're supposed to know. So that's another reason, is updating the mindset. And then third is it builds relationships. So people who come and study at the American University of Kyiv are now developing relationships with Arizona State University, with American leadership at the university, with faculty members. They have the chance to continue their education in Arizona and get an ASU degree, not just an American University of Kyiv degree, but they finish up in Arizona, they can get an ASU degree. So it's opening up doors, opening up the horizons for students here in ways that they otherwise may not be able to do.
What's the price tag on this? Who gets the credit? I mean, I think you had a lot of public money, a lot of private money.
We've had all private money so far. We've had a number of investors who share the vision, just what I articulated to you. EPOM, which is a Fortune 500 company owned by people who are originally from Ukraine and Belarus, but are now in the U.S. They do back office software. So they had this idea. We have Wings and Freeman Capital, which is Tbilisi and Kyiv, private equity investment managers. And they have worked on many projects with DFC. They helped create the Georgian American University in Tbilisi. They've worked with Sheraton. They worked with Marriott. So they have taken part in helping to set this up. We have DTEC Academy. So the training program for DTEC has bought into the university as well. We have Brain, which is a mail order distribution company in Georgia. BGV, which is the owner's the largest supermarket chain in Kyiv. They were one of our earliest investors. So we've raised a lot of private capital to get the university off the ground. And we are in the process now of talking with the U.S. Development Finance Corporation, with the European Investment Bank, trying to then raise some additional financing for the university to continue our growth.
Is this your dream or somebody else's dream you're enacting?
It was a conversation. And so early 2020, but late 2019, Few of us, there are four founding partners. I'm one of the four founding partners. We got together. We talked about this idea. We want to build an American university in Ukraine. And then we talked about how to go about doing it. I had the relationship with Arizona State University because I had run the McCain Institute for 7 years, which was part of ASU, and took it to them as a potential educational partner. They then formed an alliance with a private education group called Sintana Education. Used to be same people who created Laureate, which they then sold off. They run Sintana now. And they were very excited to build this project. So that's how we got started. And that was, as I say, 3 years before Russia's full-scale invasion. And we did all the homework. We did all the planning, all the building out, the concept for how to do the university. When Russia's full-scale invasion broke out, I was here, I think it was February 3rd, 22, for the launch of the university. We had a public event at Barkovy, and we said, well, we're here we are, we're starting up the university, and we were going to take our first batch of continuing education students in March with the idea of opening up our doors to undergraduate and graduate in September. Well, we had to postpone opening in March of 2022, but we decided very quickly that we wanted to go forward anyway, that this is needed for Ukraine. It's needed for the new generation. It's a show of confidence in Ukraine that we're doing this under these circumstances. So we continued, and we did open our doors in September of 22, but we had to do it online only for the first year, virtual education. We slowed down the renovation of the building so we didn't burn too much money too fast. But with the second year, which started in September 23, it's all in-person education. And we have renovated, as you see, this beautiful building here. And as we go into our third year, bringing another, our estimates are between, let's say, 300 and 400 new students in September, we intend to make this a hybrid model as well, where we can combine in-person and online education. And our purpose is to continue to grow, to offer access to this dream for as many people as possible.
Well, will you have, what's your capacity, 1,000 students or?
Bigger, right? Well, we don't have the capacity 4,000 now. Our ambition is to get up to around 5,000 students, but that will require us, as we grow, to come to another campus as well.
This is bought from a private person, right? Or the city?
It's leased. So this building is owned by a private individual, and we're leasing the building on a long-term basis.
I'm very inspired by the idea and the mission which is behind the university. That makes us really close to our dream to be a truly a strong democratic country in the heart of Europe with very high living standards, with right mindset, I would say. So, and of course, like the technologies we have, that is a game changer. Have the digital capacities, like the student information system, student learning system, all that like technological solutions which are available for the most expensive and popular universities in the world, our great library we have with all that like, you know, digital accesses we have. So that makes difference. That's great, like that we can offer such a high level education for Ukrainians, which is much cheaper than it's abroad, and they can stay here.
Right now, what are the most popular majors for students there? And I think you graduated 30-something on February 23rd.
Yeah.
What did they major in?
Oh, the most popular program is a master program in global management. And some of the graduates were the graduates of this program as well as from our School of Digital Technologies. We will also have second graduation this year with those students, 32 of them, who are now obtaining the diploma from ASU. So in May, they will have their graduation ceremony in ASU, and they will have their capstone project at AUK. So they will have the dual degree. In total, we will have about 60 graduates. graduates this year, and that's a proven concept. So these people came to us just trusting the idea, and they joined the university. We haven't opened our campus at that time, so they were starting online in 2022. So they believed in us, and now they are like the life testimonials, that proven concept that this idea comes true. We expect more and more students because, like, the university is driving, and even though we have this terrible war situation, the program I mentioned, the global management, is quite popular. We are doing that in partnership with one of the leading schools in the whole world, which is Thunderbird School of Global Management. On the one hand, it's complex, but on the other hand, it's so simple and practically oriented. So students are very satisfied, like, with what they learned here, as well as due to partnership with EPAM. So we have a quite strong IT school, also master program, which is called Global Technology and Artificial Intelligence, as a step forward. And that opened a lot of opportunities for our graduates in their international market, not only in Ukraine.
As you know, tens of thousands of Ukrainian students go elsewhere, other nations, to get education. Do you think that with the American University of Kyiv, that we'll start to see more quality options to keep more Ukrainian students here?
I'm pretty sure that international students will come to Ukraine as soon as the war is over and the victory will be in our hands. They will be just, you know, flowing here because, like, to see Kyiv, to see Ukraine. They unfortunately, because of the war, but the whole world now know what is Ukraine. It's not like the part of Russia. It's a big country, really big country in the center of Europe. And for them, it's also a great opportunity to have Ukrainian American diploma.
I'm glad you mentioned the offline events. Since I attended graduation ceremony on February 23rd, I got invitations from you guys to this offline event, to this online event. What is the strategy behind it? Is that even if you're not a student, you want to make the American University used every day or as much as possible and make it a community center so even non-students can enjoy the beauty there?
Yeah, absolutely. And you could see, Brian, that we have American flag right below the Ukrainian flag in the center of Kyiv. So the building itself tells people, like, this is something American here. Come closer, see what's going on here. And with our format of UK Talks, like an open platform online and offline, where prominent people can share their experience, talk to our students, not only to our students, to their, like, we invite a lot of guests. Let me share with you one example, like, to be more specific. As a part of the Arizona State University, they have the Pat Tillman's Veterans Center. This is, like, the leading organization who helps to adopt veterans, student veterans, to civilian life. And SSU is big, like, public university. Every year they have about 15,000 veterans among their students' community. So this Pat Tillman's Veterans Center has a huge experience of how to integrate these people to civilian life, how to smooth this adaptation process. And I was really happy to meet with the director of this center. We had these UK Talks on the issue of how to integrate student veterans to the community, where they shared the experience. We invited not only our students, but the representatives of different Ukrainian universities to share that experience, how for you as a faculty, as a staff, to interact with students, how to be like the support, how to prevent any suicides and and other, like, negative tendencies because of the war. And that was really helpful. It was not only like theory, but it was something like practically oriented, what we can implement now. And we, all of us, could share our experience. That's just a small piece which illustrates, like, how this partnership is important, that we can contribute to each other, like, culture, experience, mindset. So that's what we are doing here. And we are very proud about our speakers and about our audiences. After every year a speech, we have quite a live Q&A sessions, which demonstrates that people want to know more. Students are so motivated and interested in everything. Like, so, yeah, we are happy that we can bring some prominent Americans and we can just, you know, strengthen this partnership in Ukraine.
veterans issue is so important, and it's going to be for many years in Ukraine, unfortunately, and it is in America and any other country that's known war. How do people find out about your events? Are they on the website, or can people subscribe to a newsletter?
We just, you know, engage people to subscribe to our social media accounts in Facebook and LinkedIn. We regularly update any announcements and release the post videos of our events. They can also follow our website. We have that event module in it, so they can visit that page and watch some events and follow the upcoming news. So yes, for sure. And we are very like digital ones, so we are in social media.
You can be found. You're not a secret place.
We can be found. Yeah, definitely. And we are always welcoming people in our campus. So this is like an ancient
video. I highly recommend it because I was, you know, old enough to have gone to River Vauxhall, which was rundown but charming in its own way, and the terrace overlooking the Dnipro River was a fabulous place to be. And so I was a little sad when I first heard that the American University is going to be there. But having been there, I can say you've done a wonderful job with remodeling, and it's still a charming place.
Absolutely.
And I hope as many people as possible get to see it, whether they're going to become students or not. Lyudmila Dohonovska, Chief of Staff of American University Kyiv, thank you so much for being my guest today on Ukraine Calling in Hromadske Radio.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners and viewers, thank you for tuning in to this very important program. Really enjoyed this interview. So thank you. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.